Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC inviting you to our State of the Union viewing party. The speech is on Tuesday night, and you're invited to come and watch with me in the green space. Our producers will be there along with special guests and the bloggers from our politics website. It's a free country. There'll be comedy. There'll be bingo before the speech. And yes, we've ordered a life-size cardboard cutout of President Obama for you to get your picture taken with. So come drink our beer, sit in our theater, watch the State of the Union with me on Tuesday. Tickets are $15, and you can order them now at wnyc.org/thegreenspace. Now, the official state visit of President Hu Jintao of China to President Obama has already been viewed as a success by some. Tough talk from President Obama on human rights, Chinese currency, diplomatic relations with North Korea, with some acknowledgement of that problem beyond what has come before from the Chinese leader, and even bringing up the Dalai Lama, all well received by the American press. And there seems to be some space for thawing of the complicated U.S.-China relationship. Still, China is poised to exercise major control over crucial aspects of the United States economy in coming years, from controlling a huge percentage of United States debt to continuing to keep Chinese currency weak enough that they can export goods cheaper than U.S. manufacturers can compete with. So what should the U.S. government be doing to improve our economic standing with the Chinese? Are there concrete fiscal policies we can follow? Will those policies be diametrically opposed to our ongoing recovery from recession? And what's the Chinese perspective on all of this that maybe Americans don't understand so well? William Rensch is with us, president of the National Foreign Trade Council. He was in the Clinton administration dealing with China and other things. And Cheryl Wu Dunn, an investment banker and writer, Pulitzer Prize-winning former reporter with The New York Times, wife and co-author of Nicholas Kristof, with us now to talk about President Hu's visit and some of these issues. William Rensch and Cheryl Wu Dunn, welcome back, both of you, to WNYC.
Pleasure to be here.
And one of the important economic events during Hu's visit seems to have been a luncheon meeting with many American business leaders. President Obama at that event called for us to, quote, break out of the old stereotypes that somehow China is simply taking manufacturing jobs and taking advantage of low wages. William Rensch, is that a stereotype?
Yes. There's no question about it. I think if you do public opinion polling, that's probably the prevailing view in a lot of quarters, I think. As with a lot of things, the real picture is a little more complicated than that, but there's an element of truth in that.
Stereotype, Cheryl Wu Dunn?
I think it is, but I think that it is also being promoted by the Chinese in part. The Chinese have become much more sophisticated. They've gone way up the economic technology ladder. A Chinese official was trying to convince me that China feels very poor and inadequate in the area of high tech, despite China's leading role in making high-speed trains, the latest iPads, and now a test aircraft carrier and a stealth fighter. So they are really moving quickly.
How do you understand what are being reported as concessions in this visit? Who seems to have come with a few of those, including one in which the Chinese government agreed to scrap a policy that favored Chinese technology companies for big government contracts. William Rensch, why is China, which seems to have a pretty strong economic hand here, making a concession like that?
Well, I think partly, first of all, it's customary for the Chinese when they do a visit like this to come bearing gifts, so I'm not surprised that they've done this. A number of the commitments he made are promises they've made before. This is not a new issue. Our government has been pressing them on these technology transfer, indigenous innovation issues for several years. They've promised to back off before, so this is a continuation of previous commitments. I think the issue, of course, will be if they keep their word and whether they actually implement their commitments. I think some of these things are convenient for them because to the extent that they're developing a significant technology base there, as was just said a minute ago, they have people there for whom intellectual property protection is very important too. You know, and they're not interested in technology being stolen. They're not interested in items being copied. They're not interested in patents being broken because they have their own patents and their own technology that they want to protect. So eventually, you know, the Chinese government is subject to internal pressures, to straighten up on this whole issue.
So, Cheryl, do you think there are things about the Chinese position that Americans in general either don't understand or purposely mischaracterize?
Well, I think that there's a broad range of issues that Americans don't understand about China, and likewise Chinese don't understand about America. In terms of what's happened recently, I think it really was a win-win for both sides. Even though the Chinese gave away, so to speak, $45 billion in commercial orders, for them, that's great. They want to be seen as being a really equal partner with the U.S., and the fact that they have that power and economic might to be able to give out such gifts is really a coup for Hu Jintao as well. So for Hu Jintao's legacy, this is a really powerful moment for the Chinese. And I think in terms of them trying to move the dialogue away from China is the person who steals the jobs from American workers, I think they really are beginning to broaden that view of what China is.
And since Hu's last visit 5 years ago, the Chinese have more than doubled their holdings of U.S. Treasury debt, if the figures that I've read are accurate, to nearly $900 billion, even as Americans are running around both in fear of China's ability to pull the plug on this and send us spiraling into depression, and scratching our heads over why they would continue to buy so much U.S. debt if the U.S. appears to us to be teetering. So, William Rentsch, can you explain China upping its purchase of American debt?
Well, first, they don't have a lot of choice. I mean, they've got piles of money, thanks to the bilateral trade deficit. They have to put it somewhere. They have capital controls. They've closed off a number of options that are normally available to themselves, so they have to invest it somewhere. So their choices, they can put it in the dollar, they can put it in the euro, they can put it in the yen. And to the extent that, we remain, despite our economic difficulties, a safe, secure, profitable investment. And I don't think that's going to change. And I would also say I don't think that people here particularly are panicked at the situation because it's unlikely that they'll pull the money out. See, if they pull the money out, they'll take a terrible bath financially and would lose a significant amount of money by doing so. So, it's a little bit like that, like that old joke. If you owe your bank $1,000, you worry. If you owe your bank $1 million, the bank worries. And they're in a we have a mutual relationship that is not healthy. I'm not defending the relationship. We owe too much. We're in too much debt. There's a lot of things we need to do about that. But there are big risks to them from altering their side of the equation.
Cheryl, you're an investment banker, right? How does this look to you?
Well, in fact, this gets at the crux of the currency issue. Of course, China is not going to make a huge leap in the exchange rate. We're just not going to see a revaluation of the renminbi by 20%. They will operate very, very slowly. What it's appreciated 6 to 7% since June when they first mentioned they would do this. And so I think that the moment that as they revalue, of course, their assets become a lot cheaper. So they have to be very careful of doing that in addition to making sure that the more expensive currency doesn't hurt their export industry, because their economy is now primarily driven by exports and also government spending and fixed income. So they've got to now maneuver their economy from that makeup to one that relies more on Chinese buying power, so Chinese consumption, and they are trying to do that.
So in his column today, Cheryl, Paul Krugman points out that the current fiscal policy of the Chinese government, that of keeping their currency weak to boost exports, which the U.S. doesn't like, is doing more than just hurting American workers. He claims it's also hurting the Chinese people. Is that, in effect, what you were just saying? And will the people's fear of inflation there force the government to value their currency higher more than anything the U.S. might do?
Well, certainly the fact that the Chinese buying power is being hurt by the stronger, more expensive imports, that is a factor. But they're just not going to make any drastic changes. They have to do things in a very slow fashion. But they are trying to increase the buying power of the Chinese. And so that does mean that they will slowly revalue the renminbi. So that is it definitely there is a dynamic there, but they also have to be mindful of inflation without taking drastic measures that will upset their key industries. So it's a really fine balancing act. But Chinese have been fairly good at managing that.
William Rensch, is this important to the United States, that China increase the value of its currency or not keep it so artificially low?
Yes, it's important for both of us to, in order to maintain a healthy economic relationship, and in order for them to move away, it's exactly what Cheryl just said, in order for them to move away from an export-led growth model and more of a domestic consumption growth model, they have to. At the same time, speaking for my member companies, which are largely big multinational companies that operate all over the world, the currency issue, frankly, is not the most important thing for them. Those of them that manufacture in China, they import components and they export finished products. So they're on both sides of the currency debate. The far more important issue for American companies doing business there is the technology transfer and indigenous innovation issues that we were talking about a little bit earlier. That said, they all think the RMB is undervalued. They all think it needs to appreciate. And I think from the standpoint of a better macroeconomic policy for both countries, that's very important.
And if I might add what Bill is saying, it's very interesting because the new battlefield in China is really between the American companies and the Chinese. The new battlefield is going to be over the Chinese market because they want access. As they see that the Chinese are going to increase their buying power, the American companies want to be there to be able to sell to them.
So Cheryl Rudun, investment banker, Pulitzer Prize-winning former New York Times reporter, co-author with her husband Nicholas Kristof of Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide, and William Rensch, president of the National Foreign Trade Council and former Clinton administration trade official. Thank you for explaining some of what happened this week between the two presidents and some of the underlying issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And what does this have to do with the Chinese-American Tiger Mom book? Something. And we will talk about what coming up in a minute.